This is Steve Martin, and during that last little musical break, I dialed up and caught Mr. Tom Neckville. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi, Steve. I'm great. How are you?
Good. While we were off the air, Tom said he just got finished doing all of his chores and doing his yard work and patching his driveway, and came in so we could talk a bit for everybody on Worldwide Bluegrass, talk about Neckville banjos and all the stuff that you're doing with that. Very convenient timing.
Good. Yeah, it's perfect.
and I mentioned to Tom, and this is total coincidence, Kimber Ludeker of Della May was on, well, she just ended maybe 15 minutes ago, but she mentioned a tour from the U.S. State Department where they went around to all the stands, Pakistan, and I was going to try to lead up to Tom to let him know that there's a banjo player in Uzbekistan, and you knew her already. You knew who she was already.
Oh, yeah. This was a special project that we undertook to make sure she had a decent banjo, and she sent us pictures of what she was trying to play, which was kind of a, it looked like kind of a homemade version of a six-string neck that was somehow converted to a five-string, and who knows where the banjo body came from, but it was kind of a pieced together thing that she was using to the best of her ability, but she was obviously talented because she sent us some audio of her playing, and it was amazing what she was doing, learning on her own way over there. And so we wanted to support her. I'm really involved in the international scene of bluegrass, and so anytime I hear about somebody that is overseas playing, and especially against all odds like Jana, we want to support them any way we can.
Well, how did you get that done? I mean, you knew about her from some source, and then there must have been some effort to get a banjo to her. How was that done?
Yeah, it was a collaboration between me and one of her friends who was very instrumental in this, and I apologize for not remembering his last name all of a sudden, but Paul is very, very visible on the web. He's on the Hangout, and he has a business where he sells banjos and gold tones and different kinds of things. He's really into world music. Somebody can help me call in and tell me that he's well known. His name is Paul, and he's from out west. But anyway, he and I worked together and came up with a plan to supply her with a banjo. So basically, he helped, and then a few other people contributed some money to help cover the costs. And so we sent it over with some people that were going over there, and she was thrilled. She sent us a video of her opening the banjo up. And,
cool.
Yeah, it was quite a neat experience. It's fun to reach out. And it's possible to reach out all over the world now with the computers and the internet and everything that we got. So.
Well, that's what Kimber had said earlier. She said, you know, Della May was touring around, and they run up on this banjo player, who by then she had the Neckville banjo because Kimber recognized it. And she had never played. She got to sit and play with Della May, and she had learned strictly off of the internet. And she got to sit and play with Della May, first time she'd ever been around live bluegrass musicians, and then she got to sit and play with them, which just must have been an absolute blast.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? All right.
Yeah.
That was a nice little tie-in to the earlier interview. But Tom Neckville of Neckville Banjos. Tom, I've always wanted to ask you about some of those innovations that you've had in designing banjos. And, of course, the one that immediately comes to mind is the way the resonator is attached. But I want you to give a little bit of history of your company and the thought that went into the designs that you use now.
Okay, I can do that now. I can look back on 30 years of banjo building. And when I first started this, when I was in my, I guess, 20s, I was more or less a player, but always seeking that better sound. And when the banjo I had, it was a good name brand, but it just didn't sound the way I thought it should sound. And so I tinkered and eventually built myself another banjo that was a traditional style banjo, but I built it with the help from First Quality and some of the well-known banjo people in the U.S. So I built a high-quality traditional banjo, realizing, boy, that's a lot of parts involved in that banjo, a lot of tinkering, a lot of things that can sort of rattle loose and go wrong. And you practically have to be really on your toes all the time to keep that thing in tip-top shape. So I was musing with a friend and thinking about things that I might do to the banjo, to make a banjo. I don't want to go on too long, but...
Well, let me stop you there, Tom, because before we get... And the audience is very sophisticated, I think, on this show, because they've been listening, and they're still listening now, then they know that there's a lot of banjo talk. But just for some of them out there, when you say traditional banjo, we're talking about... all the brackets and all the hardware that supports the rim, which is that, you know, piece that the drum head sits on. There's a metal piece between that and the wooden rim, and there's all these nuts and bolts that attaches this big resonator to the back of it. And that was one of the parts. When you say traditional banjo, that's what comes to my mind, is the traditional Gibson design. Yeah.
Whenever I say traditional banjo, I'm talking about what you think of, basically a drum. With a neck attached to the drum.
Yeah.
And a drum has hooks holding a hoop down, and then there's multiple hooks that you have to tighten around the banjo. There's 24 hooks usually, or more, and 24 nuts and brackets or a flange and various rods, coordinator rods.
Yeah.
Now, the incentive to change the banjo really came about because I looked at my own life and realized that I had nothing but interest in banjos, and I had experience in design and mechanical engineering. So when I studied myself around the age of 30, everything came up banjos. And in order for me to really feel like I had fulfilled my life in a career, I decided to pursue the course of banjos. But only after getting this idea of a head that basically it has threads around the outside of the banjo head, giving even tension on the head. So we eliminate the hooks and nuts, but we have a ring that tightens the banjo in with one moving part into a framework. The frame is a one-piece deal that is attached to the neck. So at first glance, it may look just like another banjo, but then upon a little more, a little more study, you see that the frame of the instrument, the drum part, is actually a metal frame with a banjo drum mounted inside of it. So it's kind of an interesting way of turning the banjo almost inside out, because we've taken the structure part of the banjo, the metal parts and the framework, and separated that from the part that makes the tone, and we mount that tone ring in there in the inside of the frame without any stresses from the rods, because there aren't any rods.
Well, so, and for the people listening, when you're let's say the head breaks on a banjo, and a traditional banjo, we'll talk in the terms you just described. There are all these little metal parts and all these bolts, and everything has to be re-tightened up and realigned. And what you're saying is that with the design you came up with, a very innovative design, you've reduced a lot of those, my words, not yours, you reduced a lot of those areas for failure.
Yeah, a lot of variables. There's a lot of experts that are really good at quickly setting up a traditional banjo, and if you're experienced at that, it's a fun and challenging hobby to get banjos sounding their best. And I do that all the time myself, as well as, build my own banjos. I do a lot of repair and setup on traditional banjos. And, it's a funny niche that I got into, but it really fits me. I love what I'm doing, and I just never get tired of it.
Well, and the idea that you had, and we'll describe it a little bit more in a bit, but the idea that you had wasn't just for convenience sake. You weren't just trying to make a screw-on lid to a jar by doing this. Mm-hmm. You were trying to make it eliminate what I would consider points of and I use this term because I probably picked it up from an engineer, some opportunities for failure, meaning rattle or something not being correct. But you also are not trying to give up the quality of the sound for that convenience. You intend to produce a sound that would equal what would be considered the traditional banjo sound, right? I mean, you're not just doing this to make it easy and cool looking.
Right. The whole concept occurred to me with the thought that an unimpeded tone structure inside the instrument, and when I say tone structure, that's the part engineered for good sound. It's got a tone ring, a metal cap to usually a wooden shell. And then that's just pushed up into the banjo frame without any other metal connections. So my intuitive self thought, I think that would be a pure sound. I think that would be a much more even tone and
easier to reproduce each time, don't you think?
Yeah. There's fewer variables, and it's less mysterious to set one up. But there's still, you know, easy. There's numerous ways to get different sounds, and it just makes it easier to go about those setup things. And you said that, we haven't really changed the character of the banjo tone. I think we might have cleaned it up a little bit and given a little bit more consistency to the sound. And people have always commented on how the notes seem to be equal in their volume from the low part of the neck to the high part. And the traditional, as I keep having to say, the standard banjo is wonderful. And, you know, there's so many great sounding instruments out there, but I'm starting to get a really discerning ear, and I can actually hear the differences now between a traditional banjo and a Nexo style Gila mount banjo, I call it.
Gila mount, yeah, that's the term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, there's somebody in the chat room here, Tom, on Worldwide Bluegrass. We have an open chat room, which is a window where people can sign in and chat and talk about things. There's a fellow in here who's told us that Paul Roberts is the guy from Banjo Hangouts.
There it is. Thank you. You know, that was on the tip of my tongue.
I know.
Know it was a common sort of name, and Paul's a good friend of mine, too. He'd be disappointed to hear that I forgot his last name. But
We have good helpers on Worldwide Bluegrass. Somebody named Miller said, tell him. And this guy, here you go. This may help you recognize. He is the only gold-plated, says the only gold-plated Nouveau Neckville. Is that,
that could very well be, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that's all I don't want to give away the whole identity because I can't always tell. But anyway, we know Paul Roberts. And now, so you have an engineering background then.
Well, you know, frankly, it was a sales engineer. In other words, we were selling to engineers, and I had to kind of talk that language in the area of mechanical parts or rubber parts or springs or stampings or castings. You know, we would be a manufacturer's rep for selling services from machine shops to industry.
Okay.
Now I'm on the other end where I'm using services from parts suppliers sometimes, I make most of my parts myself in our Bloomington shop. In fact, I just recently bought an entire tone ring factory, which is pretty cool.
Really? These would be the older traditional tone rings?
Well, you know, tone ring is a tone ring. It's a metal cap that sits on top of a heavy wood ring in a banjo. And they are a source of controversy and discussion because we're all trying to find the perfect tone ring, the one that gives you the goosebumps when you play it, and it's got the volume, and it reminds you of the, you know, bygone days of Earl Scruggs, and, you know, just the numerous nostalgic things that come to mind when you pick up a really, really great sounding banjo. Sometimes that is considered to be, the tone ring is quite often considered to be the heart of the banjo. In reality, it certainly is important, but there are so many little details on a banjo, like the frets being perfectly, you know, in the right shape and level, the bridge being set exactly for that banjo, and the head tension being evenly tight and tuned to the right level of tightness. Those things are more important to the sound. You'd notice more difference from those things. But all else being equal, there's nothing like having a banjo set up right and with a fantastic tone ring.
Okay.
And that's why you hear so many people out there in the banjo world talking up their latest tone ring. It's kind of an interesting field. You know, there's a lot of claims made about how they've analyzed old formulas to come up with the secret combination of copper and zinc and tin and lead and so forth to come up with this perfect formula. Well, I've heard all about it in the last several years, and there aren't that many secrets left. Everyone's kind of figured out what the formulas are that work, and I believe that it is now a matter of finding a good maker, a good ring, getting it professionally installed in your instrument. If you're that kind of person that's looking to really find the holy grail sound, and in consultation with someone that is an expert setup guy, you can really find that. You can find a banjo that sounds the best in the world to you. Everyone is individual. They all have a slightly different idea of what is a perfect sound. And so I take pride in the fact that we try for that all the time. We always seek to make the person playing extremely happy with their instrument so that they feel like they've got the banjo, you know. And when you do have that banjo, you can really play better, you have more confidence, and nothing's stopping you from going out and showing that banjo off. It's a lot of fun to have a really hot-sounding banjo. So,
do you have a lot of people that want custom things done as far as design or fretboards?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time. It's really fun. This is one business that gets me in touch with people, and I make friends, daily in this business. And quite often I always get a chance to meet new people, and those are continuing relationships. Whenever I go to a festival, I run into people that had bought a banjo for me years ago, and I get to see the banjo again, and it's very rewarding to know that I'm making a part of, lending to the musical side of a lot of people's lives. And I think it's so important for us to enjoy that part of.
Of course, you have a website too, Tom, and I want people to be able to go there and see, because you do have pictures of the Healy mount, a little more explanation, and pictures would help, because if you see the banjo from the front, you may not recognize it, but you have a website also, right?
Yeah, it's nexville.com. It looks like Nexville, NECHVILLE.com. But, we've had a website for many years, and it's developed into a pretty good source of information, and there's a few videos on there showing how the banjo works, how to best put on strings so they don't slip, just some real practical tips, and we have our newsletter online, feature of certainly all of our models, and then we've got some really new and interesting things that are really fun to look at too, and that's kind of my trademark is what's new. There's always something on the horizon that we're working on.
On the we've talked about the Healy mount and what you were attempting to do and eliminate all those different variables so you can have a more consistent good sound. The connection to the neck, is it different than a traditional banjo?
Well, thanks for asking. Yeah. Definitely is. And once we figured out how to put the banjo drum in place in this frame, then we had to figure out how to get the neck attached to the frame itself. Now there's a benefit there because you actually, the neck is mounted to the body with an adjustable means to angle the neck down or up. And if there's a little locking screw at the base of the heel of the banjo neck, and then you can loosen that to alter the angle of the neck so that your string goes up and down as far as you want from the frets. So you can play with low action or high action, or if you want to put a really tall bridge on the banjo, you can adjust the neck so that your strings aren't so high off the fingerboard. And that's huge. I mean, that's as practical and as important as getting your head evenly tight. And that one feature alone is enough reason, I think, for every banjo player to have one of these in their collection. But we do use that quite often. I change the neck angle when I want to use like a different style of playing. If I'm going to try like claw hammering, I want a little higher action. Right. I want to grab under the string, so I'll lift the neck up and give me a little higher action. Likewise, if I want to try a really tall bridge, I'll go the other way with the neck and move it down so that I've got, the right hand is plenty of space under the string to pick with, but on my left hand, the strings are right there, nice and low and easy to play. Mm. Yeah. That's something that we have, and it's not really possible to adjust other banjos that way unless you actually physically cut the angle of the neck to be at a different angle. And it's not an easy thing to do with the compound curves and angles that a banjo neck has and fitting to the body. So we've made that a little simpler, and if I can ramble for a second more, I'll say that the neck that we have that's adjustable like this also works on a hook and neck style traditional cat. You need an adapter piece, and I have dubbed it the flux capacitor.
Say that again, the flux capacitor?
The flux capacitor, it makes time travel possible. it's a cool little device that my neck plugs onto. And that device, in turn, gets bolted right to the banjo body through the use of the coordinator rods. Frankly, it sort of reduces the importance of the coordinator rods, except for the mounting feature that they have threaded connections that can bolt right to the capacitor. So we leave the coordinator rods in and just leave them set the way they should be. And it generally helps the sound of the banjo after setting it up with a flex. And then you have that freedom of neck adjustment so that you can explore some different bridge possibilities and different styles. Many players start out with low action, and then as they get to be experts, they actually go higher because they like the tone and the expressiveness of higher strings off the fingerboard. Yeah.
With the flex capacitor then, because normally, if you're going to adjust the angle of the neck, you're going to have to, adjust the coordinator rods at the top of the, where the tuners are. It takes a little bit of knowledge to be able to get that done. Are you saying with the flex capacitor that once you've got it set, you don't have to go back and make those adjustments by hand?
Yeah, let me just clarify, because we're talking about a couple different adjustments.
Okay, okay.
Up at the top of the neck where the tuning pegs are, there's a little excess hole usually for the truss rod. And that is a very important adjustment that we have in our necks. We use a stainless steel two-way rod so that when the weather becomes moist and humid, if your neck expands due to excess moisture, you can go counterclockwise with that little screw in there to straighten the neck back out. Usually humid weather makes the neck bow backwards because it swells up with moisture. And then when it's really, really dry, the neck kind of dries out and it sort of bows forward, and it increases the action, the string distance from your frets. Now, you want to keep your neck always about the same straightness. So when weather, humidity, and things will change that, you want to just always be vigilant about your truss rod adjustment. And we haven't changed that in our banjo. We just have offered a really reliable truss rod that works.
Okay.
But at the inside of the banjo, there's some stabilizing rod that go across the middle of the banjo. And they're kind of dual purpose to sort of, you know, reinforce the roundness of the banjo rim and also to give a means of attachment for the neck. Because the end of those little rods are threaded so you can bolt the neck right on there. And they're like, act like nuts to hold the neck on. But, as I said a minute ago, the coordinating rods are really not necessary, once you have the flux capacitor, because that provides the solid, you know, the port that you plug the neck onto, and you've got a good, neck to body connection formed by that metal piece, the flux capacitor. So, it's, you know, it's very interesting for banjo players. I know you've got a lot of banjo players out there that maybe have heard these terms, and maybe the explanation I'm giving is turning on light bulbs for them finally.
I think it helps a lot.
That's my hope, anyway.
I think it helps a lot. And I've seen your banjos, the Healy mount, and I don't think I've seen the new thing you're talking about, the flex capacitor. I've not seen that up close.
You know, you would probably not even notice it too much if you looked at a banjo, because it's pretty incognito. It would be a shiny nickel looking part that would kind of blend in with the hardware on a banjo, but nevertheless, it's something that we exclusively offer, and we have that as a patented feature now that we hold you know, the original patent for the heel mount and the Nuvo neck, and then this is the next patent that I got just a few years ago. It's for the way that the neck connects on to that flux capacitor piece.
Okay, so that's kind of a brief summary of your approach to changes on the acoustic banjo, but you also make an electric banjo.
Yes, I do. We got a lot of boost in that whole department. We may have gained a lot of our notoriety early on through the electric banjo thrust of, you know, in the, probably 80s and 90s, mostly the 90s, I guess. Alison Brown, Bela Fleck, they were helpful in designing custom banjos for them that they could use in various places. The Dixie Chicks, Emily Robeson, picked up the electric banjo as well, and she really put it to use. It was a very practical thing for her because she wanted the sound of a banjo in a giant auditorium with those screaming teenage girls, you know, and you need something that is not just a standard banjo. So she was able to get the tone that sounded like a banjo coming through in a giant setting like that, and then we've gone on to deal with like the Springsteen band and some country groups like Keith Urban and Tim McGraw, and you know, they don't play banjos on every tune a lot of times, but they, when they need a banjo, they need something that's reliable.
And the sound, Tom, and I've played these. We're talking to Tom Neckville here on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. The sound of your electric banjos, when you plug them in, it just sounds like a loud acoustic banjo to me.
Well, I think so. You know, there's usually two pickups on on my Meteor banjo, so that would give you more or less, you'd have a magnetic pickup and a piezo pickup. And then we have technology to be able to blend them both or turn them both up, turn, you know, one up or the other up. But the thing that is nice is that you can control how much of that acousticness is in the sound by using, I think the piezo part of the pickup is more acoustic sounding. But the electric part of it just sounds so good, and it gives you a kind of a bit of a twang that might be really good in country music, mm-hmm. and or some other styles of music, and it gives you a little wider sound spectrum, going from an acoustic sound to probably more of a sustaining electric type sound.
I don't know. I played one years ago, probably at IBMA at the booth or something, and you plug it in. And the only reason I mention that is a lot of times electrifying an acoustic instrument is difficult to make it sound acoustic because you have some processing going through the, but yours, if you want it to sound like a really loud 5-string banjo, it's almost a complete reproduction of what you would get sitting there just playing, you know, mic'd somewhere.
Yeah, it's really the best, solution so far to get a really loud amplified true banjo sound. And it is, I say true banjo because there's a regular head. It's not dampened like with a bunch of foam and so forth. Mm-hmm. However, you can pop a piece of foam behind the head to eliminate the possibility of loud stage volume feedback. But the generally that's not a problem. And it's a smaller head, so there's less problem with the big size of a traditional head. It's just there's too much surface area feeding, you know, back, and it's just too difficult to get that to work.
And when you see one of these, and you can see them on the Neckville Banjo website, when you see one, it's round like a banjo. It has a solid wooden body, and that'll get you that extra sustain, I guess, if you're looking for it. But it actually has a tiny little drum head right in the middle where the bridge sits down. And, I guess that gives you both options with the wooden body. I almost think back mm-hmm. to the very first, electric guitars where all of a sudden let's get sustain involved and let's use a solid body. So you've got that component, and you've also got the acoustic head there.
Yeah, and you know the when you start messing with electric banjos, you start opening up doors in people's imaginations at the same time, and so people wonder, okay, well, what about this and what about that? And pretty soon we made a synthesizer electric banjo, so that now we have a MIDI compatible. Electric banjo.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of going the other way from the reproducing of an acoustic banjo sound, but this one would give you the control over a whole myriad of synthesized sounds. And now that is something not for everybody, but I have to say that it is one of the funnest things that I have ever done is to sit down with a synthesizer and use the techniques of three-finger banjo playing to control like orchestras and, you know, trombones and just countless combinations of instruments. And go ahead, Steve.
No, is that still, would you still consider that? If they're looking on the website, are they still looking at a Meteor that has that feature added to it, or is that a different name of a...
Yeah, that would be the Universal Meteor.
Okay.
And then we have one called a Cosmos, which just eliminates the head, because if you're going to use the techniques you know on three-finger style banjo playing and apply it to a different instrument entirely, you really have some power there, because, you know, think of how fast a banjo player plays and how much control he has. A good player, I should say she or he, good players are just in command of the whole fingerboard. Yeah. And as a solo instrument with electric sound behind them, they really have a lot of power to go different places. I know one of my friends, Matt Menifee, has adopted an electric banjo and as a lead sort of guitar player in a country band. I think he's with Big and Rich.
Well, and Matt, I remember him from Cadillac Sky.
Yeah, yeah, great player.
Oh, he's a phenomenal player. He's everywhere. He's all that. That makes sense to me that he would be using something now that would kind of translate into an electric guitar sound because he was so everywhere on the fretboard.
So the banjo has so many directions that really have been little explored, and I just have a lot of confidence and hope in the banjo that it's really it's not done growing, and it's just beginning to escape the purely folk style of music that it was born in, So, it's coming into its own, and I think we're seeing more variety happening with the old fiber.
Yeah, and you're right there, man. Tom Neckville and Neckville Banjos, you're right there just kind of creating new little features here and there, and they're catching on, and people like them, and you have a lot of followers, some pretty big, not that it matters all the time, but some pretty big names are now handling Neckville Banjos on a regular basis.
It's been a joy to be able to do what I love and meet a lot of great people in the meantime.
I've enjoyed this so much because I know of the banjos, and like I said, I just play for fun and I play with friends, but I knew there was something different, and that's why I wanted to, cause see, I get to learn all this good information in the guise of doing a radio show. This serves two purposes. I get to talk to you, and then I get to ask you all these little questions that I've always had back in the back of my mind. So this was great, Tom. I appreciate you coming in and chatting a little bit, and we'll catch up with you again. I don't want to keep you all day because I know you just came back from doing your yard work and you might have other things to do. But, man, I really appreciate this so much for you being available and talking about the innovations that you've made. And I got a feeling you got some more up your sleeve that are going to come down the pike at some point.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we definitely do. I'm all up and wrapped up in the tone ring business lately. We're building some really nice rings for ourselves and for other builders. So it's no secret that we are now in that business as well as a wholesale supplier of parts. The festival season is in full swing, so we have guys going out to festivals all over the country.
Will you have a rep at Gray Fox, do you know?
I've been there many times, and it's one of my favorite festivals. But this year, I do not believe that we'll have nothing official there, but there may be a few unofficial reps that are willing to show their banjo off, which is very common. Neckville players are usually pretty proud of their instrument, and many times they're acting kind of like a sales rep for me, to show it off.
Well, there's got to be one up there floating around. I'm going to be up there. I'm taking this show up there for a couple of days, and we'll be broadcasting live and doing some interviews and stuff. And if I can find someone that's got one in their hands, I'll get another peek at it and maybe see the flex capacitor also. This has been great, Tom. I appreciate this so much, man. I really do.
I do too. It's been a real pleasure, Steve. I appreciate being able to be on your show.
Okay. Well, we will do this again sometime. I always ask everyone to be available in the event that I have more questions. So, Tom Neckville, Neckville Banjos, thanks so much. And I'll let you get back to your day. And we're going to move on with some music. And we'll catch you again some other time. Okay.
All right, Steve. Thank you. Bye now.
Thanks, Tom. That was fun. I absolutely enjoyed picking up all those details, and they're if you're a banjo player and you're listening to this show, and odds are that you know someone who is, or you are one, they're just cool things. Look at Neckville Banjo, the website, and just see all the different things, and you'll recognize those engineering changes that he's talking about. They're just really cool, innovative stuff, and the banjos sound good, and neat stuff. I enjoyed that so much.